Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 28th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll highlight tonight's Comedy for a Cause fundraiser for NAMI Juno. Carol White from the Taylor White Foundation will be here to discuss the organization. We'll find out how you can order rotary roses. And we'll talk with local guitar maker George Gress about building guitars. Those interviews, National Native News Writers Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Currently 44 degrees in Juno.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government earmarked more than $8 billion for Indigenous programs when it delivered its budget. While some Native leaders say it's a good step, others say it's not enough. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
After he was elected in the fall, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau pledged to rewrite the relationship with Canada's Aboriginal people, and he would back it up with programs and money. The budget his government presented to Parliament in March contained what Trudeau described as historic funding for Canada's Native people. It includes nearly $2 billion to improve water quality on reserves, $2.5 billion for primary and secondary education, more than $600 million for First Nation child and family services, nearly $300 million for health care infrastructure, and $500 million to address poor housing conditions, all spread out over 2 to 5 years. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, calls it a significant investment.
We've had a 2% funding cap for over 20 years. And that created a huge gap in terms of the quality of life. So if you don't start making the investments like in housing and education and training and water and childcare, that gap's maintained. So what I see today is a break against the status quo. And once you start making those key strategic investments now, it's good for Canada because those high social costs are going to start coming down.
But others would like to have seen more. Some noted that most of the money would be spent in the latter part of the government's mandate, part of it even coming after the next election. Sheila North Wilson, the Grand Chief of the Northern Manitoba First Nations, says $2 billion is just what her people need right now. She calls the government's plan a deposit on a historic reset. Still, others are more optimistic, saying it represents a positive change in attitude, enough for them to place their trust in the country's new young prime minister. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The organizers of the Longest Walk say they're encouraged by the reception they're getting. The walk across the country started in San Diego February 13 to raise awareness of drug abuse and domestic violence. Orlando Vigil is the national coordinator of the event. He speaks in classrooms, community centers, and tribal gatherings along the way. He says he's grateful that his message resonates.
So I tried to encourage them and tried to encourage them to be with their families, but also that thought came to my mind that their families might be dysfunctional at home. You know, maybe the way my family was dysfunctional at one time. And so I told them, you know, you have to be that leader to change your family.
The walk concludes with a rally in Washington, D.C. this July. A nonprofit group focused on reducing suicides on the Pine Ridge Reservation is sponsoring a monthly art competition for the Lakota youth who live there. As Jim Kent reports, the group's goal is to offer hope and support to children and teens.
The Metokopi Foundation was created in 2011 by Jennifer Jessam, an artist, producer, director, and educator. Jessam says she and her husband had been visiting the Pine Ridge Reservation for 20 years when a rash of youth suicides occurred in 2009 and 10. Since Jessam and her husband are both artists, they decided to address their concerns with a two-pronged approach toward suicide prevention.
One is supporting things that were already going on that were very successful. And the other part of it was creating arts programming. And that's the focus for us, is suicide prevention and arts programming. And it's really just about giving these wonderfully creative and really inspirational young people just more opportunities to express themselves, to have different things that they can invest their time and energy in.
The Foundation's first monthly art competition is a poster design for the new suicide hotline named The Lifeline. The style is open for youth to age 18 and should include the idea that hope and support are available 24/7. Jennifer Jessam sees art as a powerful tool to give anyone the opportunity to express themselves through a voice they already possess. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Vision Maker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. On February 20th, Vision Maker Media celebrates 40 years of advancing Native culture, heritage, wisdom, sacred stories, and the storyteller. More at visionmakermedia.org. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 28th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and we are here to talk about Comedy for a Cause coming up this Friday, April 1st. And in the studio with me is the executive director of NAMI, Crystal Borland. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Thanks, Scott.
And also board member. She's on the peer counselor and will be a storyteller at the event, Paula Rohrbacher.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, you two. We'll start with NAMI. Crystal, tell us about it.
Sure. NAMI stands for National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're the local affiliate here in Juneau, and we're mainly providing information and education support services for individuals and families affected by mental illness. And we mainly do this through free classes as well as ongoing support groups that are really meant to just provide some knowledge base about mental illness and living with a mental health condition or caring for someone.
To give us an idea of scope, how many individuals in 10 have mental illness?
How many individuals in town?
In 10, would you say?
Oh,
like
in 10.
1 in 10?
1 in 5 individuals experience a mental health condition every year. And then we talk about more serious mental illness. Nationally, it's about 1 in 17 individuals. So pretty high number.
Okay. Yeah. In Comedy for a Cause, so a local night of humor and storytelling this Friday, April 1st. Paula, you're actually going to participate in this, but you're also on the board. How did this come to be?
Well, I had the opportunity to tell a story at a local storytelling event that happens monthly called Mudrooms, and it was so much fun to do that I was ready to just chuck everything and just become a professional storyteller. But I thought it would be great to have a local humorous tell stories at the Comedy for a Cause event, so I suggested it, and we started reaching out to folks and got some great people, and so that's how it all came about.
Okay. And what inspired you to get on the board in the first place, if I may ask?
Well, I experienced depression and anxiety, and I was asked if, as a person experiencing a mental illness, if I would join the board. And so I did, and it's just been great. I was able to be trained to be a teacher for a peer-to-peer class, which is one of the programs that we offer, and it's been a wonderful opportunity.
Speaking of classes and other services, you mentioned a few of them before, Crystal. Can you tell us a little bit more about what NAMI provides?
Sure. So one of the classes that Paul is talking about, peer-to-peer, this is a 10-week class that we offer for free to individuals who have any mental illness diagnosis. So whether they're newly diagnosed or maybe they've experienced for a mental illness for many number of years, it's just about getting a good knowledge base, because you really get information that you can't get in a doctor's office. They don't necessarily have the time to provide all the information. So we talk about the biology of mental illness, how medications work and how they affect the brain. But it's also just providing a way to manage your mental illness and be able to share some mutual support in a room with people that are that can understand. So it's led, again, by peers, as Paula said, so individuals who are also experiencing a mental health condition.
How often are those classes?
Generally, we offer our programs about twice per year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this one is coming up really soon, actually, the day after Comedy for a Cause on April 2nd, so on Saturday afternoons. Our programs kind of switch around in different areas of Juneau. This time it's going to be at Bartlett Regional Hospital in their classroom area. We provide a free lunch, and it's great curriculum, great group of people.
Would this be appropriate for someone who suspected that they may have a mental illness, or they have a family member who might have a mental illness?
Well, we have different programs for family members, and so those would be the right programs. We have one called NAMI Basics, as well as family to family. So certainly for family members, there are their own programs. For someone who is not certain, I think certainly having a diagnosis or receiving treatment is kind of a first step. You know, this is for individuals who are really coming together to kind of share some of their experiences. And so it's a good learning opportunity, but again, probably for someone who has a diagnosis.
Okay. And to support programs like these and classes like these, peer groups, Comedy for a Cause. This sounds like a lot of fun. Tell us about some of the presenters this Friday night.
Sure. So I'll just run through some of our performers. It's a great group. We have Jeff Kirsch, Pat McClear, Libby Bacalar, Marcus Blankenship, Paula Rohrbacher, who's next to me, and Pete Griffin. And then Tom Cosgrove, who really helped. He was the kind of the curator of this event. He will be our MC for the night. So it's an awesome lineup. Just really, you know, humorous storytelling. So we're also going to have a silent auction. So for those of you who have guests coming into town this summer, we have some great tourist trips. We have flight trips. We also have some just great items that will be on auction. So we have waffles for purchase by Gonzo, which I'm really thrilled about. So they'll be having some sweet and savory waffles, and we'll have a no-host bar with beer and wine.
And Paula, remind us of the details. When do the doors open and such?
Doors open at 6, so folks can come in and look at the silent auction items, and then the actual program starts at 7, and it goes until 8:30, and it's at the Jack.
And what about tickets?
Tickets are available at the usual outlets and also at the Jack. You can go to our website and click on Comedy for a Cause, NAMIJuno.org.
NAMIJuno.org, Hearthside Books and the Jack are where tickets are on sale. We'll also have some tickets at the door.
I'm looking at some of the names on your lineup, and these are some of the people that have made me laugh the hardest.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years, some great storytellers and comedians, really.
Really, wow. Yeah.
This looks like a lot of fun. This Friday night, April 1st, Comedy for a Cause, a night of local humor and storytelling to support NAMIJuno, Crystal Borland, and Paula Rohrbacher. Are we missing anything?
I just want to thank one of our main sponsors, Rainforest Pediatric Care. They really sponsored and titled this event. So thank you to them. And we really hope people will come out for a fun night of local humor.
It's going to be great.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Don't you love the sound of a last laugh, my friend? Don't you love the sound of the last laugh at the end? Down in the gutter where the mad old soldiers, down in the scuppers where the drunken sailors, down in the gutter where the mad old soldiers. But the last laugh, baby, is yours. And don't you love the sound of a last laugh going down? Games you thought you'd learn, you neither lost nor won. Their dreams have crashed and burned. Keep on keeping on. Out on the highway with the road gang working. Up on a mountain with a cold wind blowing. Out on the highway with the road band working. But the last laugh, baby, is yours. Don't you love the sound of a last laugh going down? had you crying, and you came up smiling. And the last laugh, baby, is yours. And don't you love the sound? The last laugh. The last laugh going down.
Support comes from Treadwell Ice Arena, offering an adult hockey clinic March 26th from 4 until 5 p.m. and March 27th from 1:30 until 2:30 p.m. No experience is necessary and all abilities are welcome. Those interested are encouraged to sign up early. Helmets, breezers, elbow pads, gloves, shin guards, sticks, and jerseys are all available and offered on a first-come, first-served basis. More information at 586-0410.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 28th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, about 16 minutes after the hour. We have a little extra time here on the show. Just got to speak with Paula Rohrabacher, and I was saying I had a chance to hear her and Phoebe and Miguel, most of the Rohrabacher family on Mudrooms, but I hadn't ever heard Charles, and she said, well, Charles has one too. So with that extra time, here is Charles Rohrabacher.
Charles Rohrabacher was a military counselor for the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors in San Francisco when he was invited to Juneau in 1980 by the Catholic Peace Fellowship and Alaskans for World Peace to present a workshop on draft and military counseling, which led to him meeting his wife, Paula, a year later. They'll be celebrating their 34th anniversary in October. Making their home in Juneau and having a daughter and a son, Phoebe and Miguel, all of them are Mudrooms veterans. A Catholic deacon for the past 10 years, Charles continues to believe that Jesus was serious when he said, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Please welcome our first storyteller tonight, Charles.
So it's all true. I was a military counselor for the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors, which meant I'm not a lawyer, but we spent a lot of time with the military law review, studying military regulations and federal court cases. And I got to counsel all kinds of folks in the armed forces, Army, Navy, Air Force. But I will say probably the most challenging and interesting were the Marines. Semper Fi. So I got to know the Marines out in front of the Armed Forces Entrance and Examination Station in Oakland, where I did pre-enlistment counseling, and I learned a lot about the psychology of many of those who do join the Marines. One young man in high school, I was showing him the contract, talking to him about what was involved in entering the armed forces. And I said, "Why do you want to join the Marines?" He said, "I hate high school." I said, "Okay, what is it you hate about high school?" "I'm sick of people telling me what to do." I said, "It's going to work out for you, my friend, in the U.S. Marine Corps." So I was working late on a Thursday night at the Central Committee in our rundown office where we were working 60 or 70 hours a week for next to nothing, got a phone call from a young man who said, "Is this the CCCO?" I said, "Yes, it is." And I said, "What's your problem?" He says, "Well, I'm in the Marines. I'm at the Concord Naval Weapons Station, and they're threatening to kill me." I said, "Okay, good. Could you go into a little more detail?" And he explained that, in fact, he had been at Moffett Field, which was about 40 miles away in the Marine detachment there, and he turned in his sergeant for hazing. Now, good idea. You can do that in the military. The problem is that can follow you around, because instead of putting him on an aircraft carrier sending him to Okinawa, instead what they did was they sent him to Concord Naval Weapons Station 40 miles away. And, of course, word travels quickly, And the next thing he knew, he was getting death threats. Now, the particular death threat was that he was going out that weekend, remember it's Thursday night, that weekend, to go on a live fire exercise. This live fire exercise means everybody's got their M16s and a lot of ammunition, and there's lots of bad things that could happen to you if people wanted to do something fatal to your life. So I said, okay. He said, what do you need? He says, well, I've got to get out of the Marines. I said, okay. That may take a little bit of time. No, it's got to happen this weekend. I said, okay, okay. So got his name, got all the information I needed. And then I thought, how am I going to do this? Well, first thing is I had to start looking a lot more official. So got the tie going here, buttoned it up, got a coat. Because I didn't own a tie. I only owned a sports jacket and a pair of khaki pants, which I've continued to wear for the last almost 40 years. And then I thought, how am I going to get on the base? I mean, the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors. Hi, if you'd just admit me onto the Concord Naval Weapons Station where you purportedly have nuclear weapons. Sure, that's going to work great because CCCO sounds like some kind of communist front organization. So I got some of those press-on letters. We didn't have printers back then. And I made a card that said, the Bay Area Military Law Project, of which I was the only, the sole member of this organization. So I made a very official-looking card. I think I cut out from a Bay Area Rapid Transit ticket, a kind of an interesting-looking logo to look sort of official. And I figured I'd wave this thing around at the base. Now, I also didn't have a car. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to be very official, it's going to be hard for me just to drive up on the bus to the base entrance. But that's what I did. I got off a block away. I had a briefcase. I had my tie. I had my jacket. I went to the front gate, where there's a Marine guard and a big crossing gate and so forth. And there's my guy. That's my lawyer! That's my lawyer, he said. I said, well, I didn't disabuse anybody of the fact that I did not have a law degree or had never studied law. And I was admitted onto the base. Went to the base and I started working my way up through the chain of command because I demanded to see the commanding officer. And I was shouting out Article 118, murder, Article 119, manslaughter, Article 124, maiming under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 128, assault, and even grabbed Article 133, conduct unbecoming an officer. I was threatening Leavenworth, I was threatening federal intervention, and I talked to sergeants and platoon leaders, and I finally got to the executive officer of the Marine detachment. He came out of his office, kind of looked me up and down contemptuously, came over and said, how can I help you with your little problem? Now, I'm kind of tall, and I never really try to use my height to any advantage, but I decided it was time to do that. So I made myself as tall as I possibly could. I leaned over into his face, and I said, Lieutenant, my little problem is going to become your big problem if anything happens to this young man. And if you ever want to see the Bay Area Military Law Project and its representatives back at your base, then you'll let something bad happen to this guy. But I'm going to advise you right now that you need to immediately start discharging procedures for this Marine and certainly make sure he doesn't go on this live fire exercise. And then I turned on my heel and walked off the base as if I actually represented something called the Bay Area Military Law Project. Well, the next day I got a phone call from that young Marine, and to my surprise he said, my God, they're discharging me. So by Monday he was on his way out of the Marine Corps, I never had to use the Bay Area Military Law Project card again. And that's my story from being not exactly in uniform, but with people who are in uniform. So thank you so much.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 28th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 26 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by John Blasco. He is the outgoing president of the Juneau Downtown Club of Rotary International. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
And incoming president, Armando de Guzman. Welcome to the show, Armando.
Oh, thank you.
It's nice to have you guys here. John, you want to start with you? Tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
Yeah, so Juneau Rotary Club, the downtown club specifically, has been around. We actually just had our 80th birthday this year, and there's three clubs in town. And we're a service fellowship organization. We, you know, about 82 members in total, public, private sector, retirees, but local community members just looking to give back to our community in many different ways and projects, and also globally with many different projects and grants. So it's a great organization that we're trying to give back collectively as best we can.
Okay. Armando, is this a club? Do you guys have a clubhouse? Do you meet somewhere? What's it look like?
So our club meets on Tuesdays at noon at the Baranoff Hotel. And then what we call the morning club, the Gastineau Club, meets at the
Prospector at
7 a.m. on Thursday. And then the Valley Club is at the airport on Wednesdays.
I think there's close to 200 Rotarians in Juneau between the three clubs.
Okay. Which is pretty, I mean, that's really good for a town this small to have that many Rotarians is pretty good.
And what inspired you to become a Rotarian in the first place?
I was talking to John about this, but it was kind of my mother. My mom was she had to work full time when she was about 11. Never got a chance to go to school, so she was my inspiration for really doing well in school. And my dad was the same way. He joined the military when he was really young. And I always look at my mother and say, if she had an opportunity, she could have. I mean, she's intelligent. She's just a hard worker, hardest working person I know. And if she just has a little bit of assistance with something, just to help her family or something, she could have been something a lot, you know, more amazing to this world. So I think that some people just need a little bit of that push and a little bit of that help, and Rotary's a really great way to do that.
Speaking of that, John, can you tell us about some of the services or philanthropies you guys support?
Sure. We, project-wise, the project we did under my year was a tri-club project with putting in a new playground at Riverbend Elementary School. So that was a big project we did this last August. Armando and the other two club presidents this next year are going to do the same thing here this August at Auk Bay. We've done projects. We do scholarships. We have with the university. We have what we call the Literacy Lion Caboose. Armando actually helped design and build it, but we're going to look to give away free books around Juneau to underprivileged neighborhoods, kind of like an ice cream truck, but with books. So that's a project we've got going now that we're excited about. And we do Glory Hole breakfast once a month. We do Empty Bowls, work with the Salvation Army, just quite a few different things that we try and get our hands on and be involved in.
Okay. And one of the ways to help support these services is Rotary Roses. Tell us about it, please, Armando.
So this is a pretty long, John and I were talking about how long we've been doing this, and it's been as long as I've been in it, so...
I actually talked to somebody earlier, at least 25 years.
So it's been going on a long time, and what we do is we sell roses, and on one day we deliver all those roses that get ordered. This year it's going to be April 7th, and the roses are $30, so that includes a dozen roses and delivery to personally hand-delivered anywhere in Juneau, but with the help of Alaska Seaplanes, we're also being able to deliver at no additional charge Cake, Pelican, Hoonah, Angoon, Elfin Cove, Tenneke Springs, Haines, Skagway, Sitka, and Gustavus.
Wow.
And that's so all those things that John was talking about, that's the a lot of that money comes from these roses.
And I noticed a beautiful yellow rose on your poster. Will there be color choices?
Yeah, on the actual website and on the form, you can pick either red or other. And I think there's peach, there's pink, yellow. Sometimes they throw in some kind of out there, not natural ones, like a blue or something that they, yeah, so.
Lavender, white, yellow, red. I mean, there's pretty much every color you could come across we have. And what is that website?
JuneauRotaryRoses.org. You could also find any Rotarian from the downtown club, but any Rotarian that you might know would be able to, if they don't have forms, direct you to someone or remind you of that website. Usually they're wearing a pin that says Rotary. We're supposed to, so that's a nice way to find it, find one of us.
Okay, so this sounds like a great sort of fundraiser. What if somebody wants to get involved and be part of the club? How could they do that?
Yeah, no, we'd love to, you know, add members to our club. We're always looking for good community members that are looking to give back. And so they could, hopefully Rotarians are talking to other members about joining the club. But if somebody's really proactive and wants to join, they could always, you know, come on Tuesday at noon to the Baranoff, to our club specifically, you know, if they wanted. Contact one of us about, you know, if they have questions before they're showing up at a meeting with 40 other people that they don't know, they could call one of us and ask questions. Our website is JuneauRotary.org, and there's contact information. Like, they could send me an email, and through that, the list of who the officers are in the club. So they could read a little more about who our speakers are and what our projects are, so they could get a feel for Rotary a little better.
Okay. Let's see. It's March 28th today. The flowers are delivered on April 7th. When does somebody have to sign up for these dozen roses?
We could pretty much do it up to that day. We'd prefer to have them by April 5th because we kind of organize it. You can also type in a message, so we have to print that out and put it into the roses. So we like a little bit of extra time. But we've had people come into the we do it at the old Reliable warehouse over by behind Nugget Mall by Mendenhall Auto. And we've had people stop by and buy them from us while we're still packing up. So we're not going to turn somebody down if we got roses.
And I know it's been going on for a long time. Do you happen to know the story behind the inspiration for roses?
That's a good question. I don't. I can tell you from putting this on last year, you know, as the incoming president, that the roses really brighten people's day. You know, whether it's a loved one or, you know, an employee or colleagues or I've seen people give to their laundry mat, you know, their cleaners, their, you know, I mean, just anybody you can think of. You know, it's April 7th, just this random day, and then all of a sudden you're getting a dozen roses just because somebody's thinking about you. So I don't know where it came from, you know, 25 plus years ago, but I do know that it's a great way to brighten somebody's day and just make them feel good.
And it supports a good cause. Can you remind us the website again, please?
JuneauRotaryRoses.org.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on the show, gentlemen. Are we missing anything? Anything you'd like to add?
No. We appreciate you having us on. Appreciate everybody that, you know, within Juneau and Southeast that supports Juneau Rotary. And, you know, we really try and put your dollars to work back into the community. And so appreciate the support, and hopefully they buy some Rotary roses.
Yeah, Juneau's been a great community. So,
thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. pense quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré pour la vie. Et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens dans moi mon cœur qui bat. Des nuits d'amour à plus finir, grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, sans mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est toi pour moi, moi pour toi dans la vie. Tu me l'as dit, t'aperçois, alors je sens dans moi mon cœur qui
is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 28th of March, 2016. It's the birthday of the man who said if a writer could write the truth about one Chicago street, that would be a good life's work. Nelson Algren, 1909, Detroit. His father was a machinist at the Packard plant. He grew up in Chicago in the seedier side of the city, and that's what he wrote about. Billiard parlors, gambling dens, speakeasies, where the cops only visited to collect their bribes. He went off to college, graduated into the Depression, jobs were scarce. He lived the life of a hobo for a while, went back to Chicago, moved in with his parents, and started his new life as a writer. His second novel, Never Come Morning, got good reviews in 1942, and 7 years later came his big popular success, The Man with the Golden Arm, about a poker dealer battling drug addiction. It's the birthday of Russell Banks, born 1940, Newton, Massachusetts, author of Affliction, The Sweet Hereafter. He was the son of an alcoholic who abandoned the family. Banks was just 12. Banks said, storytelling was a way just within the circle of the family for me and my brothers and for myself to save ourselves. We could make sense of an otherwise incoherent life for children. In The Sweet Hereafter, the novel hinges on the aftermath of a deadly bus crash in which several school children die. Banks has a fascination with school buses, which figure prominently in several of his novels. He said, the school bus is a layered, multifaceted image. It is associated, at least for me, with the first time you give your children over to the state. It's the birthday of Lauren Weisberger, Scranton, Pennsylvania, 1977. She was an assistant to the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine and wrote a book, The Devil Wears Prada. It was a big hit in 2003. It's the birthday of Iris Chang, Princeton, New Jersey, 1968, daughter of a theoretical physicist and a biochemist. Iris became interested in war crimes committed against a Chinese village by the Japanese in World War II, which she heard about from her grandparents. She said, "I was in a panic that this would be reduced to a footnote of history unless someone forced the world to remember it." So she wrote a book, The Rape of Nanking, The Forgotten Holocaust of World War II, came out in 1997, and 6 years later, The Chinese in America, A Narrative History. A year later, working on research for a book on the Bataan Death March, Chang had a nervous breakdown. She was working obsessively, unable to separate herself from her subject. She committed suicide in California, November 2004. Here's a poem for today by William Trowbridge, Don't Look Now. It never dies, the old gag, where Wile E. Coyote, in hot pursuit of his rocketing foe, sprints off a cliff and keeps running on thin air till he happens to look down, nailing us every time with that "why me" look in the drawn-out second after fortune's yanked the rug, and then we follow the poor chump's image growing smaller and smaller till the quiet puff of dust on the canyon floor. Don't Look Now, poem by William Trowbridge, from Put This On, Please, published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Come on down to the 42nd Alaska Folk Festival, April 4th to the 10th at Centennial Hall. It's a week-long party full of concerts, dancing, jamming, and workshops, all featuring your friends and neighbors. This year's guest artist is the Carper family from Austin, Texas, a four-piece band playing original and classic bluegrass, old-time, and country music. The seven-day festival of dances, performances, and workshops is free and open to all ages. More information at akfolkfest.org.
Yeah, you're listening to the guitar making sounds of Mr. George Gress. He's in the studio with us, a local guitar maker, among other things. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you.
It is nice to have you. Some folks may also recognize George Gress. He is a 30-year language and arts teacher here in the district. Floyd Dryden, the high schools. Anywhere else, George?
Out in the bush and then in Idaho, too, for quite a while.
Okay. And then you retired in what year?
This is my second year retired. Don't ask me what year, but second year retired.
And you are now a guitar maker.
Yes. Yeah. And grandfather.
And holding in your lap a gorgeous example of your work. This is number 39?
39.
Wow. And you are going to be showing, you are the April Canvas featured artist.
That's
you're going
right.
to be showing 12 of your guitars starting this Friday, first Friday at the Canvas.
Absolutely.
As part of Folk Festival, or in sort of coinciding, I should say, with Folk Festival.
Yeah, we planned it that way, yes.
Excellent. And as part of your opening, you're going to be playing with your son, Tyler.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, recording artist Tyler Gress.
All right. Well, this sounds like a lot of fun. Take us back to 2 years or however many years ago it was that gave you the inspiration to make guitars.
Well, I like to blame Chris, my wife, because she, after I retired, she bought a wood shop for me. And I said, well, it's okay, but I'd, I'd really like to just play guitar. So we came to an accommodation where I would express my love of guitar through the wood shop by making guitars. It's worked out well.
So let's see. Again, you're on number 40. You say you just finished 40 today?
I just finished number 40 today. It's a really strange-looking headless guitar. It's going up to Fairbanks.
When you were teaching, did you see yourself becoming a guitar maker in retirement?
No, I didn't.
But you've played guitar for a long time, right?
Yes. Chris and I traveled, and I was a bass player mostly for many years, among a lot of other careers. But yes, and then I dabbled with guitar for quite a while.
All right.
So I'm still not a player, but I'm beginning to be a maker now.
What's the most enjoyable part of the process for you?
I think the planning. Really two parts. The planning of just dreaming about the designs and what I can do with them and the combinations of equipment I can put on them. And the other is just the woodworking. I just love the smell and the feel of the wood as it works down. I use a lot of yellow cedar from Hoonah, and that has just a lot of oils in it that just come out. The whole shop just smells beautiful when you're working yellow cedar.
Yeah, and for the most part, most of your woods are from Alaska, is that right?
We try to do that, yeah. I'm just now making a Sitka spruce guitar. I've got the one that's going to Fairbanks is alder, good Alaskan wood. Hemlock, I made quite a few hemlock guitars. And then sprinkled in is some wood that came up from Oregon with friends of mine. We'll take, I'm an opportunist. I'll use whatever comes by. Two of the guitars came from Brandon Howard, who's the arts director at the Canvas. He gave me some pallet wood. We're not even sure what it was, but it turned out to be two beautiful guitars.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Those are good looking. Let's see. Tyler and you collaborate.
Yes.
From time to time. Your son, you're going to be playing this Friday. Tell us a little bit about how you work together.
Well, it's always wonderful when it happens. For me, it's a dream. Anytime Tyler comes over and we pick up the guitars and play together. In two different sessions in the last couple of years, I've helped collaborate on albums that he's made with a friend of his, Joe Franklin, from back east. And so those days are just magical. Tyler has a little studio at his house, and it's been a lot of fun.
And speaking of collaborations, you were saying that there are a lot of people involved here in Juneau or in Alaska with your guitars.
Yes. This one particularly is a yellow cedar guitar from Hoonah, but after I took the plank and made it into a guitar body, I took it to Susan Smith, who's a master carver out by the river. And she just did a wonderful job of carving based on the face of a friend of hers. It's got this kind of mischievous look coming out of the side of the guitar. You'll have to see. I thought this was a good one to bring to a radio show, my most visual guitar.
Could you describe it a little bit more for us, this face?
I asked her for an old man of the woods. So she took an aged friend of hers, fairly grizzled, and said, will you make a couple of faces? He gave us this mischievous sideways look, and then she went ahead and made a this long hair. The hair just runs out on both sides of the guitar, a sort of a William Blake godlike figure.
And what kind of wood is this guitar
this
made
is
of?
Yellow cedar from Hoonah.
Yeah,
it's coated, and you don't get the smell of it, but it's a beautiful wood.
You were mentioning that yellow cedar has some oils that you find enjoyable to work with. What are you learning about some of the other woods?
Oh boy, redwood is just wonderful to work with, and although it's not an Alaskan wood, Will Murray, who is a friend of mine now, brought up a big supply of old growth redwood from a 340-foot redwood tree from Eureka, had a big stash of it here, so I made quite a few guitars out of that. I love that. Alder is wonderful to work with. Most of my necks are big leaf maple from British Columbia.
Okay. You're going to have 12 of your favorites?
Yes. Displayed? It's hard to pick my favorites, but yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I think the strangest is Josh Bentz, State Trooper Josh Bentz, gave me what's called a tree cookie, just a small slab off the end of a log, and I made a guitar out of that. So that's probably the most unusual.
A tree cookie. And these guitars are for sale, right?
Yes, they are, yeah. And I don't know how Brandon's going to handle it at the Canvas, but I think, after the Folk Fest, after the month of April, I, I hope some of them move out. It'll make my wife a little happier.
If somebody wanted to see images of your guitars, where should they go?
It's ggress.com is my website that Tyler made for me as a birthday present. And I think there are 28 or 29 of my guitars on that list. Oh, there's a customer right now. Sorry.
Would you mind playing a little bit more for us off of that beautiful guitar?
Oh, that'd be fine. You know that you know the tune Summertime.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like summertime out, but
it did. It might by the end of the week, I think. As a player who's also a maker, or a maker who's also a player, I imagine that informs what you do.
It does. I'm trying to make every guitar that I make one that I would enjoy keeping and playing for myself. And it really comes in handy when I make a lot of my own necks, and so that gives me a chance to play with not only the design of the neck, but what's comfortable for me.
What's the most challenging part of the whole process for you?
Oh, boy. Electronics. I just don't get the soldering and all of that. I'm getting better at it, but it usually takes me two or three tries. yeah, that's tough.
I think you've alluded to it already, but what's the most fulfilling part for you?
I think when they're, well, the acclaim that I get, I think, is really rewarding to have a guitar finished and for people to say, that's really something, and in a good way.
And do you have a favorite? Let's see, you finished 40 today.
Yes.
In 2 years, right? 2 years.
Yeah, 15 months, really.
Do you have a favorite so far?
I don't think I'll ever let go of the first one that I made myself, which is made out of basically shelving that Tyler gave me. And it's full of mistakes, and it's kind of crooked, and it plays wonderfully. I guess it kind of reminds me of me. It's not perfect, but it sounds okay.
Tell us a little bit more about a couple of the collaborators you work with here in town.
Yeah, you know, one of the most recent collaborations is a friend of Tyler's and of mine, former student Jeremy Hansen. He and his dad, Ed, have a wood shop over on Douglas Island, and Jeremy's been, he's always been interested in all kinds of technology and how it blends with art, but he's made a couple of bodies for me using his new equipment, and they've turned out to be just beautiful guitars. Another woodworker, Brent Curry, gave me some Oregon myrtle wood, which is just this beautifully figured hardwood. And it came in just a dusty plank. He said, "Do you think you can use this?" And I made probably my favorite jazz guitar out of that. Just one pickup up close to the neck. It has a really nice warm sound. I don't know if I'm going to let that one go either. and then, of course, I mentioned Brandon gave me the pallet wood. Will Murray with the redwood, just lots of collaboration with, when it comes to finish, Bob Wynn at Valley Paints has just been invaluable for advice and for helping me out getting going with that. Leo Bayer at Alaska Music Once helped me with the electronics, so just lots of help.
And what's the future of Gress guitars, George Gress guitars look like?
I just want to keep having fun with them.
Possibly acoustics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, acoustics are out there. I'll probably need to sell quite a few guitars to get the equipment to make acoustics, but I'm very interested in it. That's where you really get the sound, the resonance from the woods that you pick.
Okay. Remind us of your website once more.
ggress.com.
Okay. And you and Tyler, your son, will be at the Canvas this Friday starting about what time?
About 4:30. We're going to be there from 4:30 to 7, and we still have to work out with Brandon exactly when we're going to play a set, but we'll be noodling most of the time.
And 12 examples of your work will be hanging on the wall.
At least 12. I just picked up another one. A friend sent one up, one that I made last year, sent it up from Petersburg.
All right, George, are we missing anything? Anything else you want to add?
I think that's plenty. Thanks a lot.
All right. This has been a lot of fun. Would you mind taking us out with a few notes?
Oh, sure.
All right.
Your secret and tell me please, can you put my mind at ease? When you're standing in the spotlight with all the girls around, I was wondering how you do it, how you make that sound, guitar man. Tell me what your secret is. Tell me please, can you put my mind at ease? Your fingers move so swiftly across those silver strings. It looks so nice and easy, how you make it sing, guitar man. Tell me what your secret is. Tell me please, can you put my mind. Guitar man in a guitar jam, play it low.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. If you're interested in seeing more images of George Gress's guitars, you can also go to ktoo.org and search for George Gress. I had a chance to do a video profile of him in a shop and examples of his work. You can check that out. Otherwise, you can tune in to a Juno Afternoon tomorrow. M.K. McNaughton will be here to highlight upcoming art classes. Rebecca Sosa will be here with details about the AmeriCorps program. Sean Isley from Discovery Southeast will be here with an update on upcoming activities, and we'll learn about the Juno Community Charter School. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTOO News and online via KTOO.org. You can tune in at 7 tonight here on KTOO for Peace Talk. Let's take a look at the weather here. The forecast for tonight calls for rain. Temperatures steady around 52. On Tuesday, rain. Highs around 48. The forecast on Wednesday calls for partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny. Thursday just says sunny. Temperatures around 57. Friday, partly cloudy. Highs around 56. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.